Kuzang Pula, thank you for tuning into the Rigs Podcast. I'm Sonam Yangdin. Technology has become an indispensable part of our lives. It is ubiquitous. Today, our existence revolves around technology and innovation, and it's a reality that it will only be a more significant part of our lives hereon. While women continue to make strides, another challenge yet again for them to contend with is the tech industry, where they are significantly underrepresented and therefore the gender gap remains stark. The tech industry, like any other, has been a reasonably male-dominated field ever since, and there is now a greater call for gender diversity and inclusion in our education system and workplace. The world's first computer programmer was a woman called Ada Lovelace from the 19th century. If she were to be born again in this century, she would be happy to see many women take up leadership roles, but not entirely satisfied or even disappointed to notice the stark gender gap in tech, which has been fueled by age-old biases that have evolved so little. With over 20 years of delivery excellence and experience in data and its use within technology and engineering, we have Sarah James to discuss more on women in tech. Sarah has worked around the world and won several awards for her innovations. She also received the AI, Robotics, Data and Analytics Shining Star Award and was a TEDx speaker in 2022. Sarah is the author of the book, Are You Ready to Change the World? Thoughts on Technology Leadership. Sarah, welcome to the Rigs Podcast. I'm so delighted that we will be discussing on the topic that is very important and at the same time, a topic that is very dear to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
And if I may come straight to the point, what is your take on the current scenario when we discuss women in technology?
Things are changing, which is good. I think there is still inequality around the world, depending on which country you're working with and where you're working. I've been lucky enough to work in a few countries in the world, but I'm still recognising that in the scene, the more senior you get, the more less representation there is. And it's very, very important that we ensure that the boards, that our governance and our governments as well have women on their boards. I think technology has, over the years, originally, back in the 1970s, there was many, many women in the field because of they were able to migrate from, they were the first computers, basically, as you mentioned, with Ada Lovelace. And unfortunately, that wasn't continued. So we haven't got the representation there, so therefore they're not coming through at the senior levels. I think that things are changing. There are many, many companies I have worked for who have targets now around gender diversity of 40-40-20, as an example. And I think it sends the right message across an organisation, but it's also very important that there's no undercurrent occurring in a backlash to those targets in males not feeling included or being discriminated against for those targets. Targets do work. I've seen it work very well in many organisations I've worked with, but it's also very important to include males in the conversation and help them to understand why and bring out the male allies. Some of the many men I've worked with have been amazing mentors to me and have helped me on my journey to get where I am today. So, yeah, I think things are changing, but I think still not more needs to be done.
Right. Agree, Sarah. Even in Bhutan, the digital landscape is gradually evolving and we have several initiatives to promote STEM-related fields. For example, we have the Royal Society for STEM that is aiming to improve and encourage STEM education in the country, under which we have the coding programs are introduced in the classrooms for children. which is actually a very a valuable gift from His Majesty the King to all the Bhutanese students in order for them to learn coding skills. And we have another voluntary initiative called Women in STEM, which is led by a young space engineer who is also a lady. And we have several other initiatives being undertaken by individuals like the Code for Bhutan program. So this is very encouraging indeed. Therefore, what are your views on early STEM education for future generations to bridge this the existing gender gap in the area?
Yeah, the sooner the better. So I personally believe that children should be taught to code in schools. It shouldn't be down to the parents to show them how to code and how to use a laptop, because many parents don't know how to code themselves, or it's like another language. If a child is taught Python or Java or C++ at an early age, it becomes natural to them. And suddenly they've got another language they can work with. For the last 2 and a bit years, I've been involved in a global movement called Coder Dojo. And Coder Dojo is for kids who we call ninjas, and they're from the age of 10 to 16, 17. And it's a place where kids can come to code on a Saturday morning. It's absolutely amazing. There's about 30 to 40 kids rock up. It's all funded by volunteers and sponsorship, some government sponsorship, some university sponsorship. And my kids get to go because my husband and I mentor on a Saturday morning. So our kids get to go. They're a bit younger. They're 8 and 9, but they've been going for 2 years. So I have seen the difference it can make to a child in their confidence and their abilities. And also some children are naturally gifted when it comes to computers and coding, and they just get numbers and maths as well, and STEM. So I believe in giving children who excel in these areas the opportunities to do so. And I also believe that every child is capable of learning, and every child is capable of understanding computers as well. The Coder Dojo Club that we're part of is a neurodivergent club. So the kids are on the spectrum, whether with autism, ADHD or other. And I've seen kids do exams that some people don't do until they're 30 or 40 in cybersecurity, for example. So I truly believe that STEM is very, very important. And I believe that technology should be part of every child's learning from as young as possible.
Thank you, Sarah. So despite all this movement and call for diversity and inclusion of women in STEM areas, have you ever felt judged for, you know, choosing to be in their field? Did you ever encounter such biases in the workplace?
Yes, many a time. And I think it's changing over the years. So in the early 2000s, aren't you going to get married and settle down? The first things that were said to me is from a manager. And it's like, well, no, I like my career. I enjoy da-da-da. And then as I got older, there was other things mentioned, like which wouldn't be accepted in modern Australia or modern UK now, like, oh, can you write the minutes for this meeting, please? And sort of that continued through till even 5-10 years ago. You'd be in a meeting and somebody would say, could you take the notes? And I'm like, well, hang on a minute. Why should I be taking the notes? I'm just a senior, if not more senior. So let's rotate these minutes. Let's do it differently. That's da-da-da. And then there's also been, I've had said to me before, now you're only hired because you're a female and we need to get the numbers. A few times. And then other things such as, I don't believe in inequality. It doesn't exist. So what I've learned over the years is it's important that you stand up to things and behaviours like that as soon as possible, that you flag them, and that you seek to understand why somebody is behaving that way. And you have a conversation with them and ask them, well, why do you feel that way? Once you understand how or why they're feeling that way, then it's an opportunity for them to change. And that is what all senior female leaders should be doing, and supporting each other as well. That's the key thing. So women supporting other women is a big movement, and I completely believe in that. Some of the best managers and teammates I've worked with are female.
Such gender gap in tech, Sarah, as you've mentioned. What are some of the issues that you foresee with this, you know, especially with the emerging AI trends? So if we have such gender gap, I mean, can we afford to have technologies that are biased towards women? For example, if an AI system is trained on a data set that has more examples or information about men than women, we do have a problem here, and because the results are going to be biased. So what is your take on this?
I think it's biased across the whole piece, really. I don't think it's just women. I think it's going to be dangerous. Australia has brought in an AI regulation authority, which I can send you details on, which is great. That is required AI governance at government level. And I also think that AI shouldn't be a black box. It should be audited. The code should be made available or ensured that it's regulated and checked for unconscious or conscious bias. Where concerns me most is, like you mentioned, the data sets, because if you are using, for example, a humor data set, which is based on certain jokes, the wrong type of jokes may come up, which might offend some people. So there's a nuance, for example, with jokes and things like that, which might not come across to an AI. And they might use a joke which is not appropriate for a certain situation. So it's also creativity as well. So if you think about who is building the AI, if that person isn't aware of their biases or unconscious bias, they also might write into the code biases. So for example, one I used the other day to figure out our carbon zero content on the farm, assumed that everybody was attached to the grid, to which we are not. That straight away is an unconscious bias which is built in. Another unconscious bias might be built in, for example, with a recruitment where they're looking for board members and they assume they want a male board member. Straight away, very good candidates are removed. Again, CEO, CTO roles, sometimes that can be built in as well, which is not good. And the other thing is then, if they're looking for specifics, which again might be gender biased. So locations, schools, for example, certain schools have different gender balances as well. When that comes into play, it does cause concern and alarm. And also the other thing is AI is being used. I think it can be used for good, in a really good way. And you need to have a board to look after how AI is being used. And the reason for that is because it's so intrinsic in our lives now, and also with health as well. So with the health apps that are out there and the AI being used for health, it's dangerous. It can be extremely dangerous if either the right data sets aren't used, the right parameters aren't used, and assumptions are made around different things, or the person developing the AI isn't mindful enough about how they're building it. I think there's more than one area of error, and it's not necessarily error. It's an ethical dilemma that countries all around the world are going to have. And then there's also, with regard to it, with the legal side of things, if you've built something which endangers people's lives, or the other side of it favours one gender or another, that is dangerous. And the legal implications of doing so can be huge. But it can be used for good. For example, finding cancers, the imagery around that is amazing. But it has to be careful, because it could be used the wrong way as well.
Sarah, drawing from your vast experience, what are some of the measures for creating inclusive workplace cultures that can empower and support women in tech?
Yeah. I think it's very important to have open conversations. It's also very important to have diversity targets. I have been very lucky enough to work for companies and help them to predict their targets into the future using AI to do so. And then understanding how strategies could be put in place to help them, to bring them into line. And those strategies don't just take place in recruitment. It's also the how an organisation hires and how an organisation grows their people as well. And I think it's very important that organisations look beyond just bringing people in. It's also thinking about which universities they're hiring from, where in the world they're hiring from, and also then investing in the future. So do they have internship programmes in order to, with 50-50 diversity? Or little things like keeping a position open till a woman applies. And also thinking about how they write job adverts so that the pronouns are very clear in terms of not being gender specific. There's nothing worse than seeing a senior role for, I don't know, a principal or director, and it says he in the job advert. You're like, well, I might not fit that. It should be they or them. And I think there's many, many little things that can be done as well. For example, ensuring that the environment in which you're working feels safe for females to work. Whether you're going to a lunchroom, a crib room, an engineering area, a work site, do you have the accessibility to clothes that are for females, and that you feel included in your workplace because you have access to a female shirt, a high-vis shirt? It's little things that can make a huge difference. Access to toilets, having targeted programs around mentorship. So mentoring females, having female leaders speak in engagements across organizations. And then also the Male Allies programs. I think they're really good, because some of the best mentors and allies I've had have either got daughters who are extremely passionate about technology, or they're married to somebody who's extremely career driven and they want to support. That is very, very important. I also think being publicly sharing the stats and the data is a good thing to do for any organization. But I also think they should be, again, governed by governments. So if you do suddenly see a drop in an organization, well, why? What's going on? What's happening in that organization? So the data can tell a lot about what's happening. And I think all organizations should be held account in government and private sector.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you for sharing some of the barriers that could deter women from pursuing careers in tech. And now I'm sure our listeners would have perceived you as an advocate, a passionate advocate for women in tech. You know? So what really motivates you to be one?
What motivates me was, when I was at school, I was good at maths. I was very, 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 very good at maths. and I used to enjoy trying to solve the problem the quickest and then figuring out problems and solving problems. And I chose not to do maths because I was going to be the only female. When you get 17, 18 in the UK, you do A levels. So I was going to be the only female doing maths. I think there was, might have been one other, but she was the year below me. So I didn't feel comfortable signing up to that class, and I didn't want to be singled out because I knew I was already different already, and I didn't necessarily fit into school. So for me, it was, I wanted to advocate for the Sarah that was 20 years ago and the Sarah that was coming through now. So especially when I had children myself, I could see that my two thought differently and loved tech and also loved maths, and design and drawing and doing and building. And you kind of, you go, well, if I don't change things, nobody else is going to change things. So I think when I was younger, before children, I used to think that, oh yeah, okay, there is definitely a glass ceiling. I used to know, I knew that there was one because I'd seen a few women try and break it, but I didn't really believe it, if that made sense, until I had some small gaps in my career. I took 4 months out both times to have children, and I'd been prepped and told, just when you have those breaks, keep going, Sarah. Don't stop. So I didn't. I was lucky enough to still have access to all my training platform. So I kept doing. I kept going, and I didn't give up. And then after children, I realised that it is really, really hard to balance work, have children, and do everything and have it all. And I think that the women I've got around me now, especially in the last 5-6 years, and being able to mentor women, what one of my mentees, I will mention her, and Courtney Carr, and she does a lot of volunteering with them as well, and Lacey Filipich as well, and also Michelle Wong. These are all female allies that I have that I know I can pick up the phone at any point in time and go, help, I need your help. What can we do about this? And then more recent ones like Helene Barry. And you kind of end up with women who support other women, and you reach out and you help each other. And I think, I don't know why, but sometimes things get hard, and if you've got another woman there to talk to, it really does help. So yeah, that's why I'm very passionate, because if I'm not passionate about it, it doesn't set a very good example to those coming through. Either.
Thank you, Sarah. You are an inspiration, actually. And thank you for standing up for all the women around. And I'm also curious to know if, even at this point in your career, do you still continue to face our challenges, gender-related issues at work?
I think yes and no. So I cross, in my work, I cross, so I run the farm, Jacaranda Hill Farm, for example. And here, I'm a female working in agriculture, crossing technology as well, which isn't normal. Again, very different. So it's not always expected when you rock up to different things. And I kind of stand out a bit because I'm, again, bright pink jacket, jeans on and whatever. And I'm not your typical farmer. I'm not your typical technologist. I'm not a typical anything. So yes, I still do receive comments or things or whatever, but now it's much easier to brush off. And the reason for that is because I know who I am. And I'm very authentic in who I am, and I'm a very strong person. So I now know how to deal with comments or little things. So they're always going to happen. Then I don't think they're ever going to not be there. And I don't think it's just because I'm a woman. I think some of it is. But I think some of it is because I'm so different. And people are often scared of what is different or is normal to them. And yeah, so yes, comments still happen. Sometimes it's, thank you, gentlemen, for all coming. And I'm the only woman in the room, and I'm like, oh, whoops, Do I say something or do I keep quiet? And it's about time and place. Some people do it by accident and because it's just natural to there to be all males in the room. But sometimes it is important to say, oh, just to let you know, that made me feel like sidelined a little. And sometimes the people don't know that's what their impact is. So sometimes it's calling the behaviours out and saying, but not in a public forum, and say, oh, did you know you just said this? And they might go, oh, I'm so sorry, I did not realise. And it often 99.9% of the time it is genuine.
Now this brings us to a final question. Although you have already inspired us enough, do you still have any message for our listeners, especially our young ladies who look up to you for inspiration?
Give everything a go. So if you have a spark or an idea or that you want to do something, do it. Because I was brought up with the mantra, if not now, then when? But sometimes an idea isn't ready, and that's okay. So you have to kind of go, okay, I've got an idea. Oh, how are we going to make this happen? Then have a go. And I always think it's important to have more than one skill. Because then, like, for example, my mother made sure that we had a career path, that we learned a musical instrument that we could fall back on and teach if we needed to, and that we had a career, something else that could be outside. For example, I was a trained florist as well. So you had that creativity coming through still always. So no matter what your career is, always have something else that you love. And if they both combine, that's then absolutely amazing. So for me, now I've got the farm running with all the technology and the fun things here, monitoring and looking at the data and looking at the cameras and the automations that we've got here. So yeah, and finally I'd say back yourself, because if you don't believe in yourself and what you can do, nobody else will.
True, Sarah. That's very inspiring indeed, and thank you very much for your time. We truly appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome.